Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. We come to you after confirming our top six finish and Europa League after a thrilling 1-1 draw with Manchester City at the Amex with a game to spare. Fantastic scenes. But before we get into that, let's see who we've got on the pod today. We welcome Joe. Joe, my friend, how are you?
Yeah, all good, mate. And we are sat in new surroundings, Europa League colours. Very, very happy. I'm going to sort of do these Europa League colours for all of our Europa League episodes next season as well. So looking forward to that. But yeah, all good, mate. I'm very glad to be going into the final day with no anxiety, especially with the final day being at Villa Park. So yeah, all good, mate.
Yes, because we've been there before in a final day against Villa needing something. So thank goodness that it hasn't transpired that way. We also welcome back Curtis Friend. Curtis Friend, my friend, how are you doing?
Tom, my friend, I'm good. It's still kind of mad to hear this talk about European football. It's still hard to take in, but I'm, you know, immensely happy. Bring on the next season. Cannot wait.
Sometimes, Curtis, when I introduce you, I want to see how many times I can say friend without it sounding weird. But yeah, in the last podcast, Curtis, there was a lot of tears. There was a lot of emotion. So today we're going to just take that one up and we're going to talk about what a brilliant game it was against City. But before we get on to that, we are very pleased to announce our guest today is Luke Lynx. Luke, thank you very much for joining us today, my friends. How are you keeping?
Very, very well. Appreciate you inviting me on the best podcast, best Brighton podcast. Absolutely love watching your shows. But yeah, it's fantastic feeling to be in a European spot here with Brighton. It's absolutely incredible and appreciate it. And yeah, it's going to be fun to talk to you guys about our amazing success this season.
Definitely, my friend. Thank you for your kind words. Now, Luke, whenever we get a guest on the show, we always like to ask them three questions just to help listeners and viewers help understand them as a Brighton fan. So the first one, Luke, is when was your first Brighton game?
Do you know what? It's a really interesting one. I actually don't think I can remember my very first game because I was quite young. I was like really, really young. I think I was about 6, 5 years of age. I actually cannot remember my first one, but the avid, I suppose, season was the second to last championship season we had. Was, I think, the first proper season that I started to really, be a bit of a fanatic for Brighton and actually support them properly. I've watched Brighton for a long time, but since I've had a season ticket, I think it was like the second to last season of the championship. So yeah, that was the time where I properly focused on games and, you know, followed them like properly. But I can't actually remember. I think I've been supporting the Albion for about 10 years now, 11 years. So yeah, pretty decent.
Decent stuff, mate. And it's no secret that on this podcast, we love football shirts. I've got a decent array behind me and Tom likes to rock a theme whenever he's got his football shirts behind him, and his theme this at the moment, if you want to guess it in the comments, guys, I'm not going to give you any clues. But yeah, Luke, what is your favorite Albion shirt of all time?
To be honest, what was the one I really liked? I think it was the, was it 17-18 season? It was like the dark blue sort of when Neil Maupay had blonde hair. I think it's 17-18 season. Correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, I quite enjoyed that home kit. I don't know why, but I just like the colours of it. It was dark blue, little different. But I do, to be fair, quite like this season's. Probably because we've hit Europa League with it. But I think it's just, yeah, it's an important kit. So, and I think because I've had a lot of shirts signed and yeah, I just think it's quite a decent kit, to be fair.
Good answer. I think it was 1920, the one you're on about. Yeah, Graham Potter's first season, I think.
Yeah, thank you, yeah. NHS season as well. So that was COVID, peak COVID. Brilliant. And now we hand the microphone to Curtis for question number three.
And the important question to finish everything off here. Who is your favourite all-time Brighton Hove Albion player? If you had to choose just the one.
Guys, this is difficult questions. I honestly don't like to say a favourite, but as you've asked the question, I will probably have to go with Anthony Knockaert just because I really did like, I really did enjoy his football when I was younger. I thought he was a really cool guy. I thought like, I always like players that are really outgoing and really agile and quick. And I have always loved wingers. So I think probably Anthony Knockaert as a kid, I've always really enjoyed him. But these days, as I've grown older, I've just become to like the whole team and not really had a favourite, to be fair.
Yeah, that's a strong choice, to be fair. You know, Anthony Knockaert, you know, he played with his heart on his sleeve and fantastic player in those championship years, especially. So, Luke, just before we get into the Man City game then, just want to chat to you about kind of like the explosion that has been your sort of your match day vlogs on your YouTube channel, because man, it's so nice to see like how much passion and time you put into that project. So Luke, how did it start? How did you sort of go from being just a Brighton fan to, you know what, I'm going to start vlogging this?
I honestly have always watched YouTube. And I've always watched more YouTube than I have slept in my life. And it's always been something I've wanted to do. It's always something I have done. I've done it for over 3 years now and done various different things on my channel. But I've always been doing Brighton. And I thought, what is a consistent thing I can keep uploading on the channel that I'm going to enjoy for the rest of my life? And I thought, obviously, Brighton, let's go with it. We started doing a few vlogs and to be honest with you, I think ever since I did my first vlog, I sort of fell in love with doing it. I also seen, of course, back in the day, Fusion Josh used to do the Brighton vlogs for Brighton and he stopped doing them. So I thought there's not really a proper vlogger for Brighton. So I thought I'll take on board with that and go for it and be the guy to give people content for Brighton and show what a Brighton game is like, show what the atmosphere is like for those who can't get to matches. And yeah, ever since, you know, Fusion Josh stopped, I thought it's time to get into the game of doing vlogging.
Yeah, this is one of the fan questions, but I thought it probably best to ask it now. Did you expect this rise rapidly, like as it has sort of exploded? I think there was one, I think it was maybe Bournemouth that got absolutely crazy views. And I think that comes in sort of parallel with it being Matoma that scored the winner, and the Japanese fans, we all know, are absolutely crazy around the Amex and especially online as well. So have you sort of seen that rise this season alone? And did you expect it?
Certainly didn't expect it. No, absolutely not. I think... yeah, there is a lot of Japanese fans that watch my channel and respect to Matoma and always love when he scores, because I know that I'm going to get quite a lot of people wanting to watch his goal from my perspective. So, yeah, it was quite a crazy, crazy season we've had with it all, to be honest. And I think ever since I started focusing on Brighton, it really did hit off. And that is why I thought, do you know what, instead of calling myself Luke Links Football, I'm going to call myself Luke Links Brighton. And I stopped doing my live streams of commentating other matches in the Premier League and World Cup. And I thought I'm going to focus on Brighton and see where I can get with it. I always had, obviously, with the feeling of no one else has really done it. I know that there are some big vloggers in Manchester United and various other clubs. So Brighton haven't had that guy to go around, travel with them and and be that vlogger. So I thought I'd be that guy. And It is hard work what I do, and coming back from away matches, I don't have a laptop, so I can't do my editing on the way home. So I have to wait, and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I have to do all the editing then. So it's a lot of work, but I think it's nice that it's rewarded me in the end, and it's nice to have a lot of these people and built an amazing community on the channel, really. So yeah.
Yeah, something I was going to point out, sorry, Curtis, and what was your turnaround time of how quickly you get those vlogs out? I just want to say fair play to you, because I know how editing takes so much time, and especially how well your videos are edited as well. So yeah, fair play. Curtis, go on.
I was going to say, so what advice would you give to a new person in this football space, you know, that are wanting to put top quality content out? What would you say to that individual?
I would say consistency. It's all about being consistent, you know, bringing the videos out as much as you can. Obviously not overdoing it and overworking yourself, because you also don't want to do it almost every day where you're almost just pressuring yourself to bring out content than actually making it good and having quality to it. So I say, you know, be consistent, be yourself, and of course you know, put all your effort into it. If you're going to go for it, you've got to go for it. You know, it's one of those things. YouTube, it makes you put all your hard work in to see results out of it. So yeah, making sure that you have the right equipment as well and do what you can with the money you have. And mostly it's all about personality. It's about being who you are. It's about putting yourself out there. And that's what people get attached to, I think, in the end of the day.
Some great advice, Luke. Some really great advice there. I mean, we've seen you interact with some Brighton players, and I think the one that stands in, you know, a lot of people says is the Joel Veltman thing. How does that make you feel? Like, you know, getting that credit from Joel Veltman, he was like really complimentary of the work that you do.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible, to be honest with you. I sort of had a little feeling about some players watching. I've seen on Julio and Ciso, he's been stalking my stories, like literally all of them. So I sort of know he was watching them, and I've had a few messages from Julio. But with Veltman, yeah, I've seen him see my story a couple of times. It's wonderful to see that the players love to see what the fans think. And it's interesting. If I was a player, I would probably be intrigued what players think of me and what they say. So it's always good. I always try and keep it positive now. I know that, you know, the players are watching as well. I like to stop if there's anyone coming on and talking negative about the club, especially the season we've had. I don't think the players deserve to hear that. So I always try and keep it positive and positive admirers as well. But hearing that, you know, he watches and he enjoys it, it really does make me want to push on and do better and do more. And especially going into Europa League, I want to be traveling to every match if I can to keep going on, pushing with it. Yeah,
definitely. Now, I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up, but you sent me a voice message as we were organizing, sort of getting this podcast together. And you said you had something to say and had something to show. Is now the right time to reveal this?
Let me get it. So, obviously, Julio Ciso scored his banger goal in the Manchester City game. This is the shirt he scored the goal in. This is the match one Julio Ciso shirt. He rang me up as soon as the game was ended. He did a little live stream on Instagram. And as soon as he finished that live stream, he rang me up saying, "I've got the match shirt for you. I wanted to give this to you for all your hard work on YouTube." So it was crazy. Yeah, I met with him after the game. And and as you've seen probably on my video, he gave me the shirt of him scoring that goal. So yeah, probably one of the best moments of my life. And I wanted to share it with you guys because I think it's a really cool thing to have, really.
Makes it all worth it. And like the jealousy that's running through all three of us right now is real, but mate, you deserve it. Totally, totally deserve it. Because, you know, as you've said, you make the hard graft journeys up and down the country. I saw you on one of those journeys. I was on the same coach as you at the Charlton game. I was I got a lot of anxiety in public, and I didn't want to say hello, didn't want to impose myself. But I mega appreciate the work that you do for the Brighton community. So yeah, fair play to you, mate.
Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it. I appreciate how humble you guys are as well. And this is why I was happy to come on today to, you know, to share it about and share your podcast about as well after it. So it's it's good to meet you guys as well. And, you know, if you guys want to come on the channel and do a little interview and shout your podcast out on my end, definitely do so.
Thank you, Luke. That means an awful lot. And one thing that some people want to know, Luke, and as someone who went through a similar thing myself, is the haircut, man. So, believe it or not, Luke, I too rocked the man bun for many, many years. So I've got two questions, Luke. I think the first one's a bit of a bog standard sort of, what made you decide to do it? And from a man who did a similar thing to yourself, how did it make you feel afterwards? Because I'm just wondering if you went through the same experience of like ghost hair as I did.
Yeah, do you know what? It's an interesting one. I mean, from my end, what started it really was the lockdown. It was in 2020. I rocked the man bun for about 4 years now, and it's ever since we couldn't get haircuts. We're, you know, in our houses, so the hair was growing longer, and I thought, do you know what, let's just rock with it, see what we can do with it. And a lot of people thought I got the haircut because of Haaland and because I kind of look a little bit like him with it. And everyone was like saying, oh, you just got it because Haaland's joined and he's doing amazing. I was like, no, it takes a little longer than a couple of months to grow out a proper man bun. But after it, when it was all cut off, literally only a couple of days ago now, it was it's quite a crazy feeling. And to get it in a different style was really difficult, I felt, as well. I think the hair just adapts to to being put in a bun and everything. But yeah, I also didn't realize actually how difficult it is to keep your hair like with a quite a big quiff now, especially going to matches and everything. It was quite easy to go to these windy away days or cold rainy away days or home days where your hair could get wet and it would be all right being in the bun. But yeah, it's going to be interesting now. It's going to be interesting to keep it in a good place.
Now, there was one question about Star Wars that came in. I don't know if you saw it, Luke, because you were tagged in it. But I'm going to pass it over to one of the guys on my right-hand side, left-hand side, because you guys are massive Star Wars nerds. And I don't know who the three people listed are. So
Luke, we got some serious questions, and we've got some proper daft ones as well. So Curtis, I'll hand this one over to you.
Right, Luke. Okay, so you have to understand, coming onto this pod, you're going to get some really serious, really tough, hard-hitting questions here.
Love it.
Just like this one. If you were to start one of these three Star Wars characters up front, which one would it be? Okay, an Ewok, right? Mm-hmm. Jabba the Hutt, you know, the massive slug, right? Or C-3PO. Who do you think would have the best agility out of those three to handle a forward position?
C-3PO has quite a cool personality. I've always been a massive fan of Star Wars. Me and my brother always watched it when we were younger. So, yeah, I do love Star Wars myself. C-3PO. I'll probably go with him.
That was my shout, because my argument was he's, as they say, a droid, but in my eyes, a robot. So you can program him to score goals, right?
Thin ice, Joe. Thin ice.
God, he's not a robot, man. But yeah, anyway, hard-hitting questions on Albion Obsessed. You
love
only
it.
Get the hard stuff here.
I love it, yeah. Bit different. I love it. Definitely do.
One of my favourite questions as well, Luke, was, what is your favourite shape? Again, the hard-hitting questions.
And why? You have to justify it.
Favourite shape? Oh, that's a really interesting question. Favorite shape? Cuboid.
Ooh, cuboid. We went three-dimensional.
Yeah.
I like that.
I would have said circle for the Brighton badge, but you know.
Rhombus, yeah, mate. So, rhombus.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I'm more
true.
Of a triangle kind of dude.
Tom, shall we talk about the Man City game, or is there one City?
I've got one more question. I've got one more question. Luke,
my bad.
What is your perfect Sunday?
Perfect Sunday? It's got to be going to watch an Albion game, though. Going to watch an Albion game, getting the equipment ready, waking up in the morning, getting everything prepared, going, traveling, probably going to a Palace match. Probably going to a Palace match at home with all the atmosphere. And if we win it as well, that'll be brilliant. So a perfect Sunday would be a win against Palace at home. In the fortress that we call the Amex Stadium.
That does sound pretty good, to be fair. As you say, Joe, let's start talking about football. Let's start with the starting 11, because Roberto De Zerbi made four changes that clinched European football against Southampton. And the biggest one, Joe, was that Lewis Dunk was on the bench. Now, Roberto De Zerbi said pre-match that he'd been carrying calf and back injuries. Does that show you just what a character Lewis Dunk is, that even though he's carrying these injuries, he's soldiered on, given our injury list is ever growing.
Yeah, I mean, we've said it before, the boy would die for Brighton over Albion Football Club, and it's credit to him that he's been playing with that pain, playing through it and giving absolutely everything. Like, people say 110% all the time and use that quite loosely, but Lewis Dunk literally does give you 110, even 120% sometimes, because if he's injured and he's playing through pain, then, you know, fair play. And I think as well with the England call up, you probably don't want to risk him. But it's a bold move, isn't it, to not risk him in the game where Roberto De Zerbi was saying, look, we need to get a point here to secure our Europa League status. Although it was pretty much already done on goal difference, you could still get absolutely pummeled by City and then give Villa incentive on the final day. And the guy that came in for him, we'll talk about him a little bit more later, because I thought he'd done a stellar job. But yeah, bold move from De Zerbi, but I expect nothing less.
Yeah, very bold. And Luke, we can't talk about Lewis Dunk without mentioning this England call. Long overdue. I think it's been 5 years since he represented England with his solitary cap. Do you think it's long overdue, Luke? Do you think Gareth Southgate has overlooked him for too long?
Yeah, so long overdue. I mean, the problem with Southgate is he has his favourites. And I think, you know, when you look at Maguire and you look at Lewis Dunk, I think if you're an actual neutral looking into it, you would say Lewis Dunk all day long. And that's not because I'm a Brighton fan. That's just because he, you know, in defence, you know, Lewis Dunk at times, he can carry that defence. And I think he does some magnificent, you know, stops and puts his body on the line at every point. And just, you know, the courage of that, you know, having some injuries and still playing on with it and not even cocking up a fuss is ridiculous. And I think it just goes to show he's an absolute warrior in defence, and he should be in that England team. And hopefully we do see him play and he's successful, hopefully.
Yeah, let's hope so, because, you know, long overdue, very richly deserved for his stellar work this season and seasons gone by. Now, Curtis, the man who came in for him, Jan-Paul van Hekker, before the game, a lot of fans were disappointed, to put it mildly, including one of our own on the podcast who shall remain nameless. And they promised you a car if van Hekker did well against Haaland. Tell your side then, Curtis, because you were very optimistic before the game.
Well,
I can tell you one thing. I'm not driving a bloody car. So, but yeah, I remember there was a lot of people like, oh, this is it. You know, they're going to ship like 7 or 8 past us. I was like, no, they're not. You know, I felt very confident about that game going into it. And I didn't necessarily know why. But I just thought there's a lot of respect here, and I knew that it was just going to be a really, really tough game. And I know that under the lights and these really, really big games, we really, really turn up, and we really, really turned up. I mean, I wasn't surprised, and I was so happy to see you know, van Hekker get that time and get a chance to prove himself against a really tough, you know, tough opponents. So really happy for him. And I mean, again, it's one of those things where I'm still amazed that we can get points out of a team like City. You know, again, if you told me this 3-4 years ago, I'd have been like, get out of town, shut the front door, you know. Yeah, fantastic game, and really, really happy for Jean-Paul van Hek.
Yeah, it really was fantastic. We'll talk a bit more about his performance in just a little while, but you could really make the argument that when the 11s came out that we were playing our, I suppose you could even call it the C team, considering the list of injuries. I mean, van Hekker, Gilmore, Buonanotte and Welbeck coming in for Dunk, Veltman, McAllister and Ferguson. You know, benching McAllister, benching Ferguson, Joe, you know, it was a bold move, but it really did pay off. So let's talk about that starting 11, Joe, and how they fared against Manchester City in the opening stages. Because I think in the opening stages, it was probably the only time in the match that I thought that Manchester City had a foothold. And I think the game turned around when Haaland missed an absolute sitter. Proof, perhaps, Joe, that he is human after all.
Yeah, he is human. Proved a little bit to me that he's a player that, if you get physical with him and don't let him get the mentality side of you and get that cutting edge, that he will have a tough game. And I know he scored a little bit later in the game, which was thankfully ruled out due to a foul on Colwill. But yeah, it's proof that he can be managed, even by Jan-Paul van Hek, who, you know, I've had my question marks over him. I've had my question marks over a few that started against Man City, and they've all thoroughly proved me wrong, that they can, you know, turn up against the best team, arguably, in the world, that are in a Champions League final, that just won the league. They're in an FA Cup final as well, that, you know, that these players can play against anyone. And it's just unbelievable to know that these players have got the hunger to prove to Roberto De Zerbi, especially on the back of our European qualification, that, you know, call on me, boss. I'm ready. And I can play for you when you need me. So it's full credit to the guys that are waiting in the wings and come out fighting.
Yeah, and I do believe that Jan-Paul van Hekker's contract is up in the summer. Happy to be corrected on that. Just, you know, the thing that really got me going was the little bit of skill he showed inside his own box when he just pulled it back. And then I think moments later, Gross did like his patented Gross turn, which wrong-footed Silva. And like the crowd just stood up. And it was just, I think that was almost like the catalyst for the half that we would inevitably see, Luke. Because I mean, I think that's perhaps the best footballing 45 minutes I've seen at the Amex ever. And I'm not necessarily like, I'm not talking about like us thumping aside. I'm talking about just general football. Two sides playing with complete freedom, knowing that they've secured the league title in Manchester City, secured Europe for us. So it was a real breathtaking game. And Brighton had so many chances in that first half. What did you make of that first half performance, Luke?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Let's be real. We're seeing Brighton take control over Man City, and it's not even like they played their B team necessarily. They have Haaland, they had De Bruyne. It was crazy to see the players that, you know, went up against us. To be fair, even I don't class when Foden plays against us a B team player. He scored against us a few times now. And to be honest with you, it was crazy to see Brighton play as well as they did. Seeing our lineup compared to their lineup, it was our like B team against their A team. It was the other way round to what I was expecting. But De Zerbi, he's done it multiple times this season, surprised me in multiple ways of some decisions that I haven't necessarily agreed with have ended off being an incredible decision that I would never have thought would be a good, you know, a good one. But yeah, it was an incredible first half. And I, to be honest with you, can't still believe that we got a point out of City with their A team.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw some stats at you guys a bit later that will just, I think, really show you how good we played against Manchester City. And many people might argue, oh, yeah, but they're on the beach, Man City, this is. But no, I think that's an excuse that is not warranted. So let's talk about some chances then, Curtis, because as I say, we had our chances. Welbeck scuffed a shot that went behind for a corner. Gilmore made space for himself and had a shot as well. Welbeck hit the bar with an absolute beauty of a free kick. Buonanotta had a chance. Welbeck had a chance towards the end of the half with a free header from 10 yards. So were you surprised at how many chances we were creating against, as Luke says, you know, a really strong Manchester City side?
No, not really, especially not as of late. Considering how we've been playing, how De Zerbi has us playing. I mean, a game like this, he's going to want us to turn up, you know, plus 10, you know what I mean? So to see us playing like that, no, I wasn't surprised. Yes, maybe we should have definitely put a couple of those away, but such is life and everything. But again, I think it would be more concerning if we weren't even making these attempts. So, you know, I was just really, really happy to see how well we played in that first 45. And I think we still, I think we played pretty well in the second half as well. We just dipped a little, but overall, just very, very proud.
Definitely. I mean, Joe, you said it yourself. We had the ball in the net three times in that first half, and somehow the game ended 1-1. Manchester City's goal, Joe. Let's talk about that. Let's get this over and done with, shall we? Haaland spinning away from Van Hekker, still comes to the edge of his box, and he squares it to Foden, who always seems to score against us. And the shot goes in, despite Van Hekker's attempts to clear off the line. But was that goal, Joe, at that time against the run of play, in your opinion?
Yeah, and I think Man City always have that threat that, you know, if you are pushing as hard as we were pushing, they're going to catch one on the counter-attack. They've got Mahrez, Foden and Haaland up front together, and that's a formidable front three. So scary. And as Haaland was running through, I was surprised he passed it. I thought he was going to take it himself. But maybe given the miss that he had a little bit earlier on, he was, I can't believe I'm saying this about Haaland, short of confidence, and squares it to Foden. And, you know, Foden does what he does against Brighton and puts it in the back of the net. And But it didn't overly worry me. I didn't think, oh no, that's the floodgates opened, because I knew that City were vulnerable. I knew we were creating chances and that the game wasn't over. And for me, under Roberto De Zerbi, except for against Everton, the game has never been over. we've always had some sort of say even late on. It wasn't a concern for me, but yeah, when you see Man City go through like that, you expect them to finish that off with aplomb, and they did.
Yeah, they did, and credit to them for that. But as I say, you know, the first half, Brighton came back into it, and Luke, what a way to come back into it. Steele sets off the attack. Colwill passes to Enciso from 25 yards out. He absolutely leathers it into the top corner. The Manchester City fans behind the goal were applauding it. Luke, I've seen your reaction. It just looks wonderful. What were your feelings and your thoughts when that belter hit the back of the net?
I thought it was Chelsea all over again. I literally thought it was Chelsea all over again. And yeah, he's literally been an absolute clinical, almost striker for us recently in Cesar. So I think his confidence ever since that Chelsea game has been ridiculous. It's been incredible to see. And I think that is all goes down to De Zerbi. I think, you know, him being that, as he likes to say, father figure as well as a coach, has just helped Julio so much. And yeah, that seeing that goal hit the back of the net there, probably one of the best goals I've ever seen, or the best goal I've ever seen in the Amex Stadium in my life. And for it to be right in front of me as well, watching it, it was even better. And it was incredible. It's incredible scenes. I mean, even the City fans clapping was when you know that it was a good goal. You know, when the champions fans are applauding it was ridiculous. And Julio, he's been absolutely incredible. And what a way to equalize against the champions. Absolutely unbelievable.
Unbelievable is the correct word I'd use. Curtis, goal of the season?
I was about to ask you the same thing. I mean, there's been definitely a few contenders, but both of them definitely are Julio and Ciso goals. Definitely the one at Chelsea, in my opinion, is just slightly better, just ever so slightly better. But that one was fantastic. And especially if you think about what it means and who it's against as well, just adds a little bit to it as well. But yeah, there's definitely a few contenders, definitely a few contenders.
Yeah, definitely. And Joe, we can't talk about this goal without talking about the importance of a man that starts it all off. And if you watch the extended highlights, I don't know if it's extended highlights, but Jason Steele, so important in that build-up play. Now, of course, we've talked about the Sanchez drama. There are rumours circulating that we might be bringing in another goalkeeper in the summer. But Jason Steele is so important in that move. He's the one that sets it all off. And as I say, when you watch those extended highlights, you know, it starts from Steele once. The ball pings around, goes back to Gross. Gross passes it back to Steele. De Zerbi's on the sideline shouting, going, no, don't pass it back. And then obviously what happens. So Joe, just how important is Jason Steele in the way we are playing?
I just want to give credit to Jason Steele's story as well, knowing that, you know, on the back of the Sunderland Till I Die podcast and when he podcast documentary, even how low he was there and how open he's been about that time. You know, football is never linear. People think that, oh, the player's finished, he can never come back. And when we signed Jason Steele, there were a lot of question marks. And this is a guy that has defined professionalism. He is the most professional player I think we've ever had, bar like Lewis Dunk and people like that. Just working his way into the team, waiting for his chance, and he gets his chance. And Roberto De Zerbi comes in and says, Jason Steele, formerly of Sunderland and League One football, you are good enough to be a ball-playing goalkeeper in a team that are fighting for European football. That blows my mind. And how casual he was against Manchester City is just a sight to behold. The man is walking. He is the coolest man in the stadium. And I still get loads of fans around me screaming, oh, what's he doing? Get rid of it. Get rid of it. Have they not yet worked out the football that Roberto De Zerbi wants to play? It baffles me when fans get so irate that we're not clearing the ball. And then a goal like that comes from it. And you sort of chuckle to yourself and want to turn around and go, see? it's just amazing to watch. And not only how important he is for the team, but how important he can be for players that maybe feel like their career's done. It's not done. Look at Jason Steele. There is still chances for you to play in a team fighting for European football. And I've got no doubt that he'll play a massive part next season as well.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, as you say, Joe, if Steele lumps that ball forward, the goal doesn't happen. Luke, what have you made of the rapid rise of Jason Steele? You know, it seemed like Robert Sanchez, you know, the gloves were his. It was secure position. But all change in the last couple of months.
Yeah, it's been an incredible journey. And like you said, Joe, you know, with that documentary and with his past as well, it has been honestly incredible. And I honestly don't think now anyone can say and talk about players by age and say that, oh, he's too old. He's surely going to dip off now. He's not young enough to improve or this and that. I think, you know, it just goes to prove that it doesn't matter how late you can be or how older you can be, you can still be an incredible player. And I think he is like really like going into games and having the opportunity. I think he has really cherished that and having the opportunity to play. And I think that is why there's been so much passion. I think with Robert Sanchez, in my opinion, I thought he was incredibly chilled out. I think he thought that he wasn't going to ever be replaced. That's why he was too chilled going into matches. I think Jason Steele, he is so focused and he wants every game to be perfect. I just think he looks a little bit more focused than Robert Sanchez. And I think he's just wanted it more. I think that's what it comes down by, is he just wants to play. He wants the game time. He wants to prove to his family that he's had problems in the past to tell them that I'm still, you know, the good player, the good guy. And right for the job. So yeah, Jason Steele's had an incredible journey and I have a lot of respect for him. And yeah, big up Jason.
That journey has been incredible, as you both say, Joe and Luke. You know, who would have thought it? From League One, Sunderland until I die, to Europa League. Absolute scenes. So I told you I was going to throw some stats at you. I've got quite a lot to throw at you today. Here's the first one. In that first half, Brighton attempted 11 shots against Manchester City. And that is the most any side has managed in the opening 45 minutes of a match against a Pep Guardiola side in all competitions. That's absolutely
staggering. Is that ever? You mean ever?
I don't know. It might be ever. It might be this season. But that is, but even as a stat, Joe, even if it's just this season, there is a stat about ever a bit later that we'll talk about. But no, as a stat in it of itself, I mean, Pep has said, Curtis, that Roberto De Zerbi's football is exceptional. And he says Brighton are perhaps one of the best teams in the world, at passing the ball from the back, which is mind-blowing considering, you know, what Pep has done in the sport. What did you make of Pep's pre-match compliments about Brighton? And what do you make of that statistic?
Yeah, I mean, that's great to hear. I mean, the greatest manager in the league. I think maybe in the future he could be considered to be one of the greatest managers to ever do it. Is saying such incredibly positive and strong words about our team, which is still madness. But to hear those, you know, to his stats like that as well, that's just crazy. That's just crazy. But again, I'm not surprised. I expect us to do much better against these teams than I do the teams like Everton, like Nottingham and whatnot, because it's just a bigger occasion and we play a lot better under these bigger occasions. Wasn't surprised.
Wow. Just how far we've come from playing against the likes of, again, no disrespect, Walsall and Darlington and all these other places to going toe-to-toe with Manchester City. And, you know, as I say, that first half of football was perhaps the best football I've seen at the Amex, certainly in a long time anyway. Joe, the second half perhaps wasn't as thrilling as the first, but there were still quite a few bits to talk about. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was the changes, and in particular about a young Argentinian, Facundo Buonanotte. I thought he had an absolutely fantastic game against Manchester City. We've seen it in glimpses of his appearances. There have been times when he's looked a bit lightweight, a bit lackluster, but I thought against City, he really showed up and he was a bit of a handful in that first half, especially.
Full credit to him. You know, he's one of the players I've been critical of. And Tom, you've reminded me multiple times that, you know, this guy is 18 years old. He's come to a new league. He's in new ways of living and needs to adjust, just like Julio has done as well. And it's, you know, massive, massive respect for them to be coming to the best league in the world, in my opinion, and to be, you know, in a this again, mad to say, a top six Premier League football club and be playing a big part. And he's needed to step up because of our injuries. And I saw Roberto De Zerbi sort of with his arm around him at full time and was giving him all sorts of praise and really, really talking to him. And as you say, Luke, he's that father figure with those young players, and that's why we can get so much out of them. And yes, we have to be careful that we're not getting too much out of them and that we're, you know, raising them in the right way as a Premier League footballer. And the sky's the limit for each and every one of them, especially under Roberto De Zerbi. I think Roberto De Zerbi is going to be a name to be reckoned with in football in the next 10 years, next 5 years even. He is a stellar coach, like easily. And maybe it's not a huge sample size to go off, eight months of a season. But I think he's genuinely one of the best we've ever seen and will ever see at this football club. He is elite.
Yeah, it's hard to argue also, with that. Manipulated also, stats.
Who I thought had a really good game was Levi Colwill. And you should just stay, Levi. Just saying, you should just stay.
Yes, I was going to bring up Levi Colwill a bit later. Let's bring it up now then. Luke, Levi Colwill. I've said on a previous podcast, Luke, that I was quite critical of Brighton bringing in a loan player, especially such a young one when we've got the likes of Jan-Paul van Hekker. I thought, you know, we should be prioritising our players, not developing younger players. But I've, you know, hold my hands up, I was wrong. Levi Colwill has been an absolute, you know, sensation this season. If you had your way, Luke, would Levi Colwill still be playing for Brighton next season?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's definitely someone to have, you know, even if he doesn't make the starting 11 on the bench to come on. It's nice to have someone, in my opinion, near to as good as Adam Webster. Well, he can be, certainly. And, you know, if Adam Webster gets an injury, it's nice to know that we have someone else like Levi Colwill to come on and do as good as a job, in my opinion. It was good in Huddersfield, I believe he was at. And I thought he was good there. I've seen a couple of videos and a couple of clips of him doing some pretty good stuff over there. He's still young, isn't he? 23 years of age or something. I think
younger than that, mate. I think he's under 20, I think.
Is he really? Blimey.
Yeah, he's quite a young lad. Wow, big ceiling.
So, yeah, that's it. There you go. You know, he's got a lot of potential. And I think all the young Brighton players that have come in this season have done seriously well. I think, you know, just going back on a little bit with Facundo Brunanotti, obviously, you know, he has struggled starting a little bit, but, you know, with his age, same with Julio Siso, I thought the confidence there needed building. And I think the same will happen with Facundo Brunanotti, like we've seen little glimpses of in the City match of him having a go and skilling round players and defenders. I think we're going to see a little bit of a journey like Julio and Siso of him. And I think it could be the same with, you know, Levi Colwill. I thought, you know, he's been in the club and I think he really enjoys it here. I think he does enjoy how the club is run and how we treat our players and especially young players. And I think he likes it and hopefully he'll make a decision and try and push to stay. I think he's brilliant. And I think, yeah, next season, hopefully we can keep Levi.
Yeah, Curtis, I mean... I think it was in an interview with Andy Naylor or someone from The Athletic. He had to be reminded during said interview that he was a Chelsea player. Now, I don't want to get all Leeds fan, you know, free Ben White on all this. But does that speak volumes about Levi Colwill's mindset that he perhaps sees himself more as a Brighton player on loan from Chelsea rather than a Chelsea player on loan at Brighton, if that makes sense?
Listen, if I was him, I would also forget I played for Chelsea too. What a dreadful season they've had. Dreadful, dreadful season. I think recently just the things he's been saying and whatnot, I think, yeah, definitely speaks volumes. He's such a good guy, seemingly, such a sensible lad. He's got his head screwed on and I think that he'll know that what he wants for his future, you know. And I think if he goes back to Chelsea, I just don't see him getting as much game time, personally. And I think he has the possibility of doing that with us, you know, playing more, even if that is just a, you know, another loan for a year or however they want to do it. But I think it would be beneficial to him and definitely to us to get a young talent like that in. But we'll just have to see what the future holds.
Yeah, left-footed as well, which is always fantastic to have a left-footed centre-back. Yeah, as I say, I don't want to get all, you know, free Ben White about all this. But no, it would be fantastic if Levi Colwill did join us. I think, you know, having European football as well next season will be a big pull. And then, of course, rumours of Levi Colwill not signing a contract extension at Chelsea also, I suppose, just add fuel to the fire. But I suppose we do have to prepare ourselves that tomorrow may be the last time we see him in a Brighton shirt. But if he does, that is how it transpires. You know, I think, you know, I'm happy to say that I was very wrong at the start of the season. Joe, I suppose we should have to talk about Haaland's disallowed goal then. Is this a bit of justice, Joe, for the goal that he scored at the Etihad earlier in the season where he basically steamrolled Adam Webster? Pep Guardiola, after the game, was very angry. I think he even got booked for it at the time that the goal had been disallowed. But it looked to me like Haaland was trying to undress Mr. Levi Colwill. What did you make of that decision?
Yeah, that is certainly not something you can do in a stadium filled with 30,000 people. Keep that for the dressing room, Erling, if you want to be doing that. But no, I think, yeah, you're right, Tom, if that is the justice that we deserve from the game at the Etihad, then so be it. 100% a foul. Not sure what Guardiola's seeing. If that happened the other way around, he would be absolutely screaming for it. So it's one of those things where, yeah, you're fickle when it happens for you, and you're screaming when it happens against you. So it's just a footballing incident that thankfully went for us. We've had a few of those over the last couple of weeks, those incidents that could go either way, that Walcott goal in the Southampton game. And I think it's coming full circle for every injustice we've had this season as well. To finally get two decisions that we're like, okay, yeah, we're happy with that. Still not happy with VAR. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, you've made up for it. But I can live with it now, considering we've secured Europa League football. And we can go into tomorrow's game against Aston Villa with absolutely no care in the world.
Yeah, because for me, that was always the worry that we'd miss out, and you'd look back at the Spurs game, the Palace game, and you'd go, we should be 5 points to the good here. But as I say, thankfully that didn't transpire. So let's talk about then how we confirmed Europa League in style. I think that's me. We've got the ice cream man coming around again. Ice cream for days. If you are travelling to the West Midlands tomorrow, it is very warm, and you might be hearing this. As I say, we do things very professionally on the Albion Obsessed podcast. So I'm just gonna wait for the ice cream.
We'll just leave this in, Tom. That's fine. What more bright and wide can you get?
Do you want to grab me one of those SpongeBob SquarePants lollies?
I can see what I can do, but I think it'll be melted by the time you get here, my friend. Okay. But no, if you are travelling to the West Midlands tomorrow to Villa Park, pack shorts. It is toasty up here. So we confirmed Europa League in style, and I did say that I was going to drop some more stats, okay? Before that game, no team in the Premier League had managed to register more than 13 shots in a single game against Manchester City this season. Brighton had 20. And only Wolves in 2019 have had more in the Premier League against Manchester City. And Atletico Madrid in 2009 against Barcelona have ever attempted more shots in a top flight match against a Pep Guardiola side. So we're in pretty good company there. Some mind-boggling stats, Luke. A fantastic performance, a fantastic point that, as I say, sealed Europa League, sealed a top six finish in the Premier League for Brighton and Hove Albion. What did you make of the game as a whole, Luke?
Yeah, it was a fantastic game. It's nice to end, you know, with some VAR decisions as well, you know, against Haaland stopping that goal over pulling on the shirt of Levi Colwill. It's, as you say, talking about the VAR as well, it's we have had a lot of unlucky spells with it in games, especially Tottenham away being the quite clearly the probably the worst game with it. Yeah, I think, you know, it's nice to end off like we have. Obviously, if we ended off poorly and we didn't quite get it, I think we'd all be thinking, ah, what if we did get it? What if we did get it? So it's nice to end off how we did. And to do it against City and not have to worry about going to Villa to still get that point is lovely, because we have struggled to get points, you know, against Villa. So hopefully we can go into, you know, Villa just chilling out, watching the game as it is. I don't know if we're going to be expecting to see any other youngsters come back like Cam or any of the others, Ofire maybe even to get a little game in. I'm not sure, but it's going to be interesting. But the way we've done it and the way we've got to Europe against Man City, it's going to be written in history books for us for sure.
Definitely. What a way to secure it, eh, Curtis, against the league champions. So looking forward to the Villa game tomorrow then, Curtis, do you think that we'll see a bit more squad rotation? Do you think Brighton will put out the kids just to get some more game experience for the likes of, you know, Adela Fire? Maybe we'll see Jan-Paul van Hekker start again. We could always see the likes of Ayari starting, Buonanotte perhaps again as well. How would you set up, Curtis, tomorrow? Would you go full strength or would you give the kids a bit of a go?
Sort of a good mix, I would say. I think it'd be good to see some of the young guys out there to give some of the other guys a bit of a rest, because it's been a very, very long season. Lots of injuries, obviously, and some of them have really had to just knuckle down and, you know, play their hearts out. So I definitely think it'll be okay to play some of the youth tomorrow, considering it's a game that the result doesn't hugely matter. It just matters for pride, I think. I think they'll want to win. But yeah, I don't see the issue with starting off with some youth and maybe chucking on some of the more experienced as the game goes along. Depends how it goes, obviously, but I'd like to see like Odell Afaya, definitely, because he impressed me when he came on. And was it what game was that he played?
Newcastle, I believe.
Newcastle, yeah, he looked good.
Yeah, he looked good against West Brom in the cup a few years ago as well. Now, Joe, just on that sort of squad rotation point, is this a good opportunity for Roberto De Zerbi almost to, like he would perhaps in a pre-season, see what these young players can do when up against a team that will be fighting for their own spot in Europe? They have to match or better Spurs' result. So is this a good opportunity to showcase what they can do to Roberto De Zerbi? Because, you know, next season we're going to be playing in four competitions, and I know there's a lot of talk about loaning people like Buonanotte out there, but for me, you've got the FA Cup, you've got the League Cup, you've got the Premier League, and now you've got Europa League. You're going to need a big squad for that, and you're going to have to rely at some point on some youngsters. So talk us through your thoughts, Joe, in regards to that tomorrow.
Yeah, I think in terms of anyone getting loaned out, and anyone that's featured for us this season, keep them in the squad. They've had that experience in a Roberto De Zerbi team, and they're getting valuable experience either on the bench in the Premier League. You know, I imagine what it's like for people like Cam and for Kondo to even be sat on the bench in some of these games and just get that aura and the experience. And I think it's massive for them tomorrow as well, if they do get the opportunity to show Roberto what they can do. As I said earlier, they're showing him, look, boss, I can do this, and play me in the Europa League. What an unbelievable incentive we have to, one, keep players motivated, two, keep players at this football club, and three, to bring in more players to this football club. The players we're being linked with, and now we've got European football, is just mad. I never would have imagined us being linked with a Borussia Dortmund player that has over 160 appearances. That is crazy. And James Milner, and bringing in João Pedro, even before European football was confirmed. So this football club is getting amazing pull, and people want to play for us. People want to play under Roberto De Zerbi, and it's a very exciting future. I lie if I said I wasn't anxious for next season about what being in four competitions is going to do to our time in the Premier League, whether we're going to struggle like West Ham have over the last couple of seasons, or just this season. So yeah, it's a worry. But Bloom has said he's prepared, and Roberto De Zerbi has said that he's made his wishes very clear. So I think you have to trust the club that we're going to do the right thing.
Yeah, I think Tony Bloom, he's no fool. He knows that if he wants to keep this going, as you say, Joe, because we've seen the likes of West Ham slip, we've seen in the past Wolves and Burnley achieve European football, and then their league form slips dramatically. So I'm sure Tony
Leicester's
Bloom...
Leicester's a big one as well.
Yeah, I mean, look at what Leicester are up against. Huge, huge change. And you know, there is a lot of down to that, perhaps down to COVID with the effect it has on their sponsors. But no, you're right. I think Tony Bloom will want to make sure he does not repeat the same mistakes that our competitors have. So, Luke, I'm going to push you for a score prediction tomorrow, if I may. What do you think the score is going to be?
Always going to be confident and positive for Brighton. I think it'd be nice to stop, you know, Aston Villa from getting the Conference League. It'll be quite fun. It'd be quite nice because, you know, they've always gotten a lot of points out of us. So it'll be nice to add to the positivity at the end of the season to go ahead and win the game. I'm going to go with a 1-0 to the Albion, and I'm going to go with Facundo Brunanotte for the goal as well. You know, he's a young player. I reckon he will play. And yeah, I reckon he's going to score as well, bring out the 3 points at the end of the season. And yeah.
I heard Julio's going to ask for his shirt back because you didn't say that he was going to score. So yeah, he'll be in your DMs later.
That's it. Yeah, I know. A bit worried about that one.
Curtis, how about you, my friend? What are you thinking ahead tomorrow? Tough game because Villa are going to play for.
Yeah, I agree. And we always, it's a team we've always struggled against, I'd argue, even especially at their place. But I'm confident going into this. I think a 2-1 win for us. I think one of those elusive, almost mythical goals from Veltman, I can see happening because he does that now and again. Usually against West Ham, I realise, but and why not Enciso again? He seems to be on really good form at the moment. I could potentially see that. Or maybe even like an Undav goal, and I'd like to see that as well because he's been fantastic towards his latter half of the season. But yeah, I think 2-1.
Very good, very good. How about you, Joe? Where do you see, what do you see the score being tomorrow?
See, these guys have been so positive and now I'm going to be like, oh dear, it's not going to be very good. Look, Villa are going to be fighting for their lives. So just putting a little bit of realism into the mix, I would say that it's going to be a really tough game. I think it'll be 2-2. Villa have got goals in them. I don't think we fold. I don't think we are on the beach. I think Roberto De Zerbi is a manager that's going to demand everything. Even if it was like a friendly against the under-23s, he would demand everything. So, I'm going to say it's a really tough game and let's go 2-2. Goal scorers for us. Let's go for Evan Ferguson and one from the penalty spot for Alexis, and he can give us a little farewell if that's to be his last goal.
Fairs. Now, as someone who lives in the West Midlands, I will have to put up with Villa fans crucifying me if we're the reason they don't get Europe. So I'm going to go with a draw as well, and then I just hope that Spurs lose or draw. I'm going to go with a 1-1. I reckon they'll be winning and then into like something like the 86th minute we'll score. And I'm going to go with Pascal because I want Pascal to become our all-time Premier League goal scorer. So I'm going to go 1-1 and that'll be that. But you're right, it's going to be a tough game because Villa are going to be fighting for it. I don't think that we'll you know, be on the beach. I think, as you say, Joe, Roberto De Zerbi will not allow that to happen. But Villa are going to be up for this because in their eyes, they've got to win. They've got to win. They can't rely on Spurs doing a Spurs.
And they're playing so well under Emery at the moment. Like, yeah. They've been a real force at times. So I think it's definitely going to be tough, really tough.
And can I just ask one question we forgot at the start? And I think it's probably a good time to ask it at the end as we sort of close off the season. Luke, can I press you for a highlight of the season?
highlight a season of goal or assist or
just a moment, any moment that's really stood out to you, whether that be on your YouTube channel, in the stadium, anything really?
I hope I'm not going to kick myself on that and think of a better one after the pod. But I think obviously it I know we've already spoken about it, but it's got to be, you know, having the interaction with the players, with, you know, Jason Steele and Julio Enciso, Joao Veltman. I think those are really key moments, especially with Julio holding the shirt in his hand and telling me I've got the shirt for you on the pitch as well has been quite a crazy moment. And yeah, I would say that game as a whole, just doing what we did against Man City and just how I was feeling that day was incredible. And I just don't see myself getting quite a better moment, to be honest with you, unless we're in the finals of the Europa League in Ireland, and then we'll be thinking different, but we'll see.
Decent, Luke. Well, thank you, Luke, so much for joining us, taking some time out of your Saturday to come and chat with us. Thank you to Joe and Curtis as well. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe. We're also going to drop a link to Luke's channel in the description down below. So go and check Luke out, subscribe to his channel if you haven't done so already, and go and check out some of his amazing match day content. It really is top, top stuff.
Thank you. Thank you.
No worries, Luke. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you today, mate. So thank you very much.
Pleasure.
And wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we'll see you next time.